Hey, you're listening to Block Thinking with Werner Puchert.
Hey, it's Werner and you have found episode 32 of the Block Thinking podcast. And yes, it's coming to you this time from a less sunny Warsaw, Poland. I've been back since my little trip in San Diego. It's good to be home. And yeah, on a personal front, I'm super stoked. I've done my first invoicing for my small consultancy. It's a bit silly though, right? But it's like a little personal milestone and I'm really happy about that. I would love to know what other people felt when they did their first invoicing. I mean, I'm still trying to navigate the complexities of administration on a personal business side, but it's all exciting stuff and I'm super grateful to be able to do this. From a news front, I've been really head down with personal projects, but something that I'm excited about in the near future, middle of this year, is Product Camp in Sopot. I had a sneak peek this week from the organizers looking at their speaker lineup. It looks really interesting. I can't wait to meet some of these people. I'm definitely going to be there if all goes to plan, and I urge you to look at it. I will definitely have some more information about the event in the next episode because I'm hitting it right on the cusp. They're actually announcing the official launch of the event next week, well, by the time you hear this episode. Then this week's episode features a good friend of mine, someone who's worked with me a while back. Her name is Joanna Skorupska. The reason I wanted to speak to her is that she recently launched her own studio called Radicals. Really the reason I wanted to talk to her is that she's a youngster. You know, she's worked for a few companies along the way, and at some stage she started her own business. And because we're kind of in the same space, we had lunch together a few weeks ago, and I thought, man, the conversation was really something that inspired me, and I would like to share it, because one of the things that I really appreciate about Joanna is that she's super, super honest. She calls, like we say, she calls a spade, and she doesn't mind actually telling the truth. Because sometimes when you listen to someone, you listen to all these inspirational stories and you just how great things are. But I mean, fundamentally, when you do your own business, when you have a career, you have your ups and you have your downs. And it's probably important to figure out what you're doing with those downs and how you shape it to create a future for yourself. And yeah, so I hope you find this inspiring, or at least have a bit of a laugh at some of the stuff that comes out of Joanna's mouth, because it's always a treat. And yeah, enjoy.
Okay, so my name is Joanna, and I'm founder of Radical Studio, and we are designing the future. I know how it might sound, but it's actually it is a business. It's not something from from the space, and we are not like predicting the future, but we actually design it because it is the process. And if you have the right tools and if you have the right knowledge, you have an influence into the future. And this is what we are doing. We are working with technologies on a really early stage of their development and trying to feed them to the market and feed them to the market in a way they are actually answer real human needs, because we believe that technology should serve human needs, not the opposite. And we also doing a lot of research. We design, we doing consulting for companies that want to be prepared for the future. And this is like a mix of everything, because I believe if you want to have a studio, you need to have like a really holistic offer to your clients, because they actually need much more than only agency can provide them.
I mean, we know each other, right? So it's a bit of a cheat, this interview. But the thing is, I could probably make a statement about why you should be in a project, or maybe why not. But what is special about you in the project?
People love my energy, seriously. And I really, when I look at the things, at the beginning, I thought it's like a, it's a problem. Like I look at the things like a, from a weird wide perspective, and, and people actually need that, because I, what I noticed that people, whenever they design something, when they provide something, it is a service, product, it is cut out from the context. And when I look at the thing, I look at like, at the
big picture.
Yeah. Big picture. Yeah.
The thing is, where does this energy come from? Right. Like, where did you go to school? Are you from Warsaw?
Yeah,
like,
I'm from Warsaw.
And did you go to school here? And
yeah, yeah. I was, but I study in Poznan.
How did you get to Poznan?
Oh my God, it's about the, it was about the boyfriend, right? Yeah, I know.
But what did you study?
Philosophy.
Great. And then the thing is, so you were in an advertising agency, but you were in digital.
But it was, yeah, it was really special department, but it, because it wasn't like a digital, because in DDB, it's separated in the tribal DDB and DDB like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we were DDC.
DDC.
DDC. And we were responsible for all like crazy technology project. We've been doing like, something with the media, with the IB cons, and that was like a department that whenever you need something which is close to the technology, which is creative, you came to the DDC. And yeah, we have really amazing team, and I learned a lot. And I was like a accountant over there. I was also a digital consultant, of course, strategist at the same time, and the creative, because you know, our team were so small that we had to be responsible for everything.
At some stage, you crossed paths with UX.
I didn't even know that something like UX exists at that time. And and I realized that there's like some kind of a gap, because we had a developer, we had a designer, but there were like no one who was responsible for actually how this app is going to work. And of course, because our team were really small, so I was responsible for that. And I was like, hey, what actually I'm doing here? It's like, and I started to Google it, and it's like, oh, there is something which is called UX. And it's actually pretty.
How long ago was this?
5 years ago.
It's not even that long ago.
Yeah, I know. And I ran this app as a UX, and I read a lot of books, a lot of materials, and watch a lot of videos online, how to do the proper UX, what is the process. And then after DDC/DDB, and I moved to the Saatchi, to the strategy department, where I was responsible directly for a strategy and the UX. And then I just focus more on the UX. But
that's interesting, strategy and UX.
Yeah, because I think that's, that UX is a kind of a strategy, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really good mix. And we were...
Why would you say it's also a strategy? Like, I'd love to know why you think so.
Because... you think, you see, we have to define what is UX for you. Because from some people, it is about the usability. For me, it's like this whole strategy, how the product's supposed to work, right? So this is how I describe it.
Right?
Exactly.
Cool. Saatchi and Saatchi, what happened next?
What happened next? Then they fired me from Saatchi. I had a tension with my boss, and he fired me for saying me that our collaboration was more down than up. But seriously, I was like, seriously, that's all up and down, and how do you describe up and how you describe down? And seriously, and I was like really pissed off. And then after that, I moved to the smaller agency, 180 Heartbeats. Over there, I was a UX.
Pure UX.
Pure UX. But I was really, you see, but this is the kind of person I am. I was a pure UX over there, but I was missing the strategy. I was missing like the, I wanted to be closer to the technology, because, well, in the agency, if you're a UX, you're basically just doing wireframes. It's boring, right? If you're just doing the wireframes, it's not a UX. It's just a part of the UX, right?
There's a title for that job.
Wireframe
Eddie. I don't know what it's called in Poland, but in South Africa, you're called Wireframe Eddie.
Yeah, because you're just like a robot, right?
Yeah, and just cranking these things
out. Yeah. So, and it wasn't enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you don't find it not being enough, do you think that might be the cause of you getting fired? Because you're always doing other stuff.
Yeah, because I always asking for more. I always wanted more. I always trying to show people that you can get more from it and try to do it. I was trying to show them like a direction. My God, I've been proposing them a lot. At 180, I was trying to show them that we have to go more to the innovation. Mm. We have to somehow start to collaborate with the startups. And they were like, okay, what are you talking, girls? And a few years later, they actually have this kind of
lab. This is where it's going.
Because you know what? Well, you know what is really pissing me off? That whenever I'm trying to say something to people, they don't listen to me and they came back, but after 2-3 years.
Yeah. That's how it works, right? I mean,
I know, but it's hard, right? Yeah. They fired me from such, right? And last year they invited me for a conference. I was like a super guest. I know what's, you know what's funny, that the conference, it was at Multikino.
Uh-huh.
When I entered the stage at the first, I couldn't stop myself from that. But when I entered the stage, I said, "Thank you for inviting me, but you know what's funny, that 4 years ago you fired me from Saatchi."
Which, you know, I just want to like idle there for a second, right? Because one of the reasons I invited you for this conversation, right, is the fact that you're so super honest,
mm-hmm.
right? Because sometimes I feel like I'll have an interview with someone. And the thing is, I mean, I also have to think about all the screw-ups I've made in my career. And we kind of sometimes shy about talking about those
career
things.
Career is
right?
all about the, may I say, fuck up?
Yeah, you can say it. Okay. I have to beep it probably.
I mean, my whole way is like constantly fuck ups. Mm-hmm. It's like full of fuck ups, seriously. But I start to realize that I cannot treat them as a fuck ups, but I have to learn from them. Okay. It's a kind of an experience that I have to use. Yeah. So I will use eventually in the future, right? But
the thing is, now imagine now there's someone listening to the show and they've just started a job or they just got fired or whatever. How did you feel getting fired? Mm-hmm. Also, like, what advice would you give to someone to deal with this?
You know what always helping me that I'm trying to convince myself that they lose something. That's their fault that they fire me.
It's their loss.
It's their loss, not mine. And if I doesn't fit here, it's not my problem. It's their problem that they didn't provide me like an environment where I can
because
grow.
You feel bummed, right? You feel a little bit like...
You feel like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Of course you feel like that. But it's like, I feel like that like maybe... one day or two, and then I just wake up and feel like, okay, I have to do something with that. Yeah, I have to keep going and I have to keep trying, because if I would like stop each time whenever like I failed, I would be like, we wouldn't be like here. We wouldn't have the conversation because I think the only advice I can give is just never stop.
Just keep on going.
Yeah, keep on going.
So let's keep on going. So now you're in this agency doing UX and you're not happy. What happened next?
Then I find then I moved to Deloitte. I read a lot about the Deloitte Digitals, what were the plans and what they want to achieve. And I was really excited because I thought this is might be the place where actually I could start, to use all my talents and give them what they need.
That mix of stuff that you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, I know because I was there.
You were in my interview.
Yeah. I have so many regrets from that interview, but that was a joke. So you're at Deloitte. And you were a user experience designer, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of formally in quotes again.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some stage, you started messing around with other stuff.
I post a picture on the Instagram and tagged Deloitte Digital because I was at the work at my desk. The chick from marketing, from Global Deloitte, she reached me and she told me, "Hey, we have this kind of like a takeover. Maybe do you want to have takeover from Warsaw Deloitte and show people actually how it's to be the part of Deloitte?" And I was like, okay, of course. And because I look at the things from a really wide perspective, white and wild. And I was really prepared for that. And I actually told the story through the takeover, because I don't want to say it loud, but I'm going to tell you, because comparing that to like the takeovers that happened before,
yeah.
they were just like, you know, they were showing the picture, but I showed the picture, I showed people the story, the whole story.
It's more of a, I remember it, like, weren't you sitting on some horse at some stage?
Yeah, I was sitting, it was my introduction, like, because, you know, you remember the ad with Old Spice, the guy, I'm on a horse now. That was funny.
Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
That was my address.
I remember seeing that takeover. This whole Instagram thing also shaped your future a little bit because you mentioned Adreno and all these things, and there's a lot of people like going like, what the hell is that, right? Because ultimately that also shaped you and moved you towards the maker in quotes movement. Can you explain a little bit, like, what happened? Like, can you explain what the maker movement is? What is this Adreno thing? And then,
of course,
it's been evolved into something else.
I think to explain what is a maker movement, we need like another podcast for that.
Exactly.
But I'm trying to be like, be specific. Okay, so maker movement is like a, it is a movement, right? But it's a movement that encourages you to make, but make in a way that you do not agree to the world that is given, but you're trying to repair it.
Yeah.
Because right now you have the tools, you have everything, and you can actually make a world in a way how you want it to be, how you see it. You can make it very personal, even, I can say, because I don't know, look at those doors, right? Well, if this, if it's broken, I can like print like a part in a 3D and I don't have to buy another one. It is about it. It's about you consider yourself not as a consumer, but also as a producer.
So a few weeks ago, a friend of mine gave this toy car to his 8-year-old son. But instead of going into a store and buy one, like we do normally, he went to this website and he downloaded the file and then he printed it on this printer. So this idea that you can manufacture objects digitally using these machines is something that The Economist magazine defined as the third industrial revolution. Actually, I argue that there is another revolution going on, and it's the one that has to do with open source hardware and the makers movement. Because the printer that my friend used to print a toy is actually open source. So you go to the same website, and you can download all the files that you need in order to make that printer. The construction files, the hardware, the software, all the instructions is there. And also, this is part of a large community where there are thousands of people around the world that are actually making these kind of printers, and there's a lot of innovation happening because it's all open source. You don't need anybody's permission to create something great.
You know the Pebble?
Pebble. It's a watch, right?
Pebble. It's a watch, right? Yeah. But it's... It actually came from maker people, from maker movement, because the first prototype was made on the Arduino, and they just like, you know, to the test first assumption, try to see how actually the people gonna react. And this is what maker movement give. It give you tools and give you like everything, so you can start just to create to make.
And what is Arduino?
This is a microcontroller, and it's super cheap. You can buy it online and you can prototype on it. You can prototype everything. You can code it in C++ and put into it like a lot of bunch of different sensors and have like code it in a different ways.
Interesting.
It's really interesting because, you know, people today, right now, they're using Arduino not only, you know, to the prototype, but actually they are doing like the homemade hydroponic stuff at home and to program Arduino in that way whenever it's like, I don't know, for example, they can control everything from your phone if you plug in like a special sensor that can connect your Arduino with Wi-Fi.
It's kind of like an interface between all the other stuff.
Yeah,
right?
It's for a hardware, right? Yeah. So you can not only not right now, you are not only have the tools to create a software, but you also can create the hardware.
Yeah.
Because I always believe if you love software, you have to understand how the hardware works.
So it's also kind of part of the doorway between like technology, you know, I would say like software and then the Internet of Things, right? Because if you talk about Internet of Things, where digital goes into the everyday life, ultimately there is some piece of technology that has to touch the real part of life.
So no, it's like not touch, but it's like more internet thinks it's more about the collecting data around, collecting data from a physical environment and send it online.
Sensor or beacon or something. And it needs to go somewhere to connect to cloud or whatever. Yeah. And then, I mean, we're going all over the place at the moment, but you're in Deloitte, you've done the takeover, people have spotted this Arduino lying there, and at some stage they invite you to do some more videos.
No, they didn't invite me. I proposed them.
You proposed them?
Yeah.
I should have known. So explain a little bit, like, what are some of the stuff that you did there?
So they really really like the content that I provide them. It was super colorful. The head of Deloitte, he posted on his Twitter, and you know, it was really like something. And I was like, okay, so guys, I have a content. I can produce for you content. I can give you like something which is valuable, which is like really unique. I can like record for you six more tutorials. Give me a budget for no, sorry. I first episode I done for free.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool. And I told them, look, guys, I proved that I can provide you something which is really cool and which is really on a high level. So give me a budget for next 5 episodes. And they gave me. Because whenever you do something new, and also whenever if you're a woman, you have to prove first that what you wanted to do. And then if they see that you are able to do it, they are more willing to give you money.
Why did you say because you're a woman?
Because I work a lot in technology and I work a lot with men. And seriously, I have to prove first my value and then they trust me. And I notice when men actually doing the same, they just like...
It's less.
Yeah, it's less.
It's not fair, right?
It's not fair at all. But I'm trying to change it with my, you know, what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
Crushing the walls.
You're one of the pioneers.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Actually, I am. I just realized that I always was.
And you think it's changing, right?
It is changing, but it's still a lot.
It's going to be tough.
It is tough. It is tough.
It's not good. Like, it's always for me a tough conversation to have.
I know, but it's really good to talk about it because if more women is going to be aware of that, maybe they're going to start to, behave differently. And I don't think like only women should be aware of that. I think we should start a conversation with men as well because, you know, we have like a lot of meetings for women from women. And I think it's the wrong direction because, you know, I've been at this kind of meetings a few times, but that was enough.
I mean,
because I don't think because you know it's important to create like a dialogue between women and men. If girls like locking themselves in a room where are girls only, it's like it's getting worse, right?
I'm doing the man thing now. I'm talking right over you, but
don't mansplaining me.
Gonna be mansplaining you now, but you know what I feel like super strong about is that and you're right. I mean, the thing is, there's no point. I mean, of course, women have to have conversations, and yes, there needs to be dialogue between men and women about this topic, right? But the thing is, fundamentally, I believe the change will happen when men start speaking to men. If you go to a meeting and you look around and you see 10 men in the room and there's only 10 people and there's 10 men, you need to ask the question, where's the woman?
Exactly.
And that's when the change is going to happen, not when women have meetings with
because,
women.
You know, they treat me like a warrior or something because, you know, I have to, if you're a pioneer in a field, you have to fight for something, right? But it's really hard when you have to, all the time you have to fight. And if actually what you're saying, it's really important because it's not only our work as a woman, but it's also work from a...
Me, right?
Exactly.
Back to Deloitte, right? So now you've got budget, you kicked some ass, and you're producing these things, right?
The main goal was to encourage people to make.
Can you give me an example?
It was a device that you put in the flower, and whenever like level of light of water in your soil go down, and the plants could communicate with you and say, "Hey, I need water." and we made like an interactive light installation.
Yeah, it's like one of these old school people. People are probably not going to know what I'm talking about. There was this dodgy guy, and I think in the 80s, his name is Jean-Michel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was like, yeah, but it was actually about the, you're talking about the laser harp. And yeah. We also made like a laser harp.
So you stole, like you stole from Jean-Michel's jar.
I didn't steal it. I was inspired by him.
I
want to show the people that actually, if you want to like be Jean-Michel's jar. You can
like
do it.
We all want to be Jean-Michel.
Of course, in some way, of course. But you can do it. You have the tools. You can build your own laser harp and just go enjoy and play.
Okay. Because the thing is, I also want to try and have a golden thread, because you were this agency doing all this tech stuff. Mm-hmm. And kind of the underpinning thing, right? Technology draws you. Like, what inspired you to be in this technology space?
What drives me? The ideas drive me. Not people, but the ideas and the possibilities that they can be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You decided to stick to the whole maker idea. You left Deloitte.
I didn't left. They fired me.
Uh-huh.
But you know what's funny?
There's a recurring theme here.
You know what's funny? That I don't know if it's funny, because during the last day, my days at Deloitte, I was in a recruiting process for Volkswagen Future Studio. And I was in Potsdam because they were looking for a UX for the new project of self-driving car. And it was big. It was huge. And I was, you know, it was a process. It was a long process. I have to go deep into the self-driving cars. I at the same moment, I knew everything about the smart
car. Sounds like a dream job for you.
Yeah. But they were actually looking for someone with more research experience. Like, I received an email from them, and the same, that they are not going to like continue the process with me. It was about 11, 12, something like that. And they fired me from Deloitte the same day.
Ooh. How did you feel after that?
I was feeling like, oh my God, what have you done? What have you done? What just happened? Two huge disappointments.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it's not the right way for me. Mm. I mean, I choose like a wrong path. I realized that I'm not fit for any kind of structure. I just have to create my own structure that I actually can work and can, you know.
Okay, because formally now you're on your own. If you reflect on that time that you've done, do you think it was valuable to go through those experiences?
Of course. Oh my God, it was priceless. It gave me a lot. And I think actually all those fails and all those bumps, everything that I learned at Deloitte, in agencies, it actually gave me, it's a part of my value right now. I can propose to my clients, because I know how agency works. I know how is it to work at huge consulting company.
Yeah.
And I have experience from a different fields. And I know how to talk with the people, because right now, okay, I'm not able to do everything on my own, because, you know, we are getting bigger, right? But I know how to talk with the developers, because I learned how to code when I was doing all the Arduino shit, right? And I know a little bit how to code in C++, so I know what is the logic behind. I couldn't like build like something really huge from the scratch.
So you're not naive. That's the word I think I'm trying. Like I mean, you're not an expert in all these fields, but you know enough. If there's a CEO listening now or whatever to the story of this craziness, what is it that you think that companies could do to retain people like you?
Give them the space. Actually, I've been doing a research of HR market recently, and this is a huge trend that you hire talents and you give them the space. You give them the space and you let them do the things on their own, in their own way. You don't put them in a structure, because the structure is killing them.
Yeah. Okay, great. So now you sit there and you think, okay, cool, two disappointments. What now?
Oh my God, I've been drinking for 2 days. And then I focused more on working with kids. Because I need a break, seriously, from business.
I don't know, like, I want to escape from kids from time to time. You run towards them to get a break.
That time I was working with a foundation that organized a workshop for kids, mm-hmm. and they hired me like for one semester, and I run my program when I teach kids how to design in the future. But it was really exciting because I never have been working with kids before, but they loved me. I mean, because I showed them all the Arduino stuff and we've been working, you know, I took from business, like all the design thinking assumption, all like the toolkits, and translate them into the kids' language.
Yeah.
And I get them through the process, but, you know, in a really fun way. And,
what did you guys do?
The first classes, we were empathizing. So we were discussing about our feelings and emotion and problem they have, challenging they're facing,
yeah.
and trying to design like the future solution that might solve them their problem.
Okay.
And it was really amazing because you know what kind of problem kids can have,
yeah,
right?
What's the issues that are seen?
The most common was, of course, like I have to fight with my brother. So
no.
They build a robot that actually tried to help them to fight with the brother. But there was like one project that I always show me in the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It is a collar for a dog that translates barking into the human voice. Because one girl, she was really pissed off that she cannot understand what her dog is trying to say.
Great.
Yeah.
You get them to build this with like...
Yeah,
all your...
they were prototyping the ideas, yeah. right? But they, you know... They were prototyping. We don't have the technology yet to translate the barking.
But she's thinking about it.
Yeah, she's thinking about it. She's an inventor, and I showed them like a totally different way of look how she can look at the things and the stuff. And actually, she doesn't have to like focus on what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But she can move to the future, and she have like yeah.
And then something really cool happened through this process, right?
Yeah, so I was at the party and one girl, she told me, oh my God, there's like a conference. I should send you like a link, because if you're working with the kids, you should apply. And it turned out it was a UNESCO conference and I
small little thing.
Yeah, small little thing. And I sent them like a huge presentation, everything. And then, and they told me that they were actually overwhelmed with the quality of the papers and the quality of the stuff that I provide.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you got invited.
Yeah, I got invited and I flew up to India.
Where in India?
Visakhapatnam.
What?
I know. You know what? When the first time when they choose me, I have to like say 20 times in my mind how to spell it, because I didn't know Visakhapatnam. And that was it's in the south of the India.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing because I travel on my own.
Uh-huh.
And if you are a white woman in India, like you are like miracle from them, because they didn't expect to see, especially in the south of India,
mm-hmm.
they don't expect to see like a white woman on the street, and they constantly taking a picture with me. And at some point I was like, okay guys, if you want to take a picture with me, I take one picture with you as well. And I have a thousand of selfies with Indian people on my phone. Seriously, I have to do something with that, because it's like, you know, it's always my time, always my face, and like around a lot of people.
And this is just on the street, or what?
Just on the but you know, it was happening everywhere. Even on my way to India, my tooth broke on the plane.
Uh-huh.
And even a dentist, when I had to visit the dentist when I was sitting there in his office, he took a selfie with me, and I was like, seriously?
In the chair.
Yeah. So
okay, so this is awesome. So then you spoke at this event. What was it about?
Like, it was about the it was actually about the future education. What kind of soft skills and what kind of technology we can apply into the, you know, in education system, so we can prepare our kids for the future. I was talking about the how actually maker movement help to develop key skills for the future.
Yeah.
If we are talking about, you know, the world in the future that's going to be optimized, that, you know, the machine is going to take over most of our jobs, how we can prepare our kids for the future.
Yeah.
And if you take the key skills from the future and you take like maker movement manifesto and you put them together, you see that actually each part of maker movement manifesto is preparing you and encourage kids that actually the outcome from that is like developing one of the skills of the future.
The maker movement manifesto.
Yeah. You should like give it a look because...
So it's a glimpse into the future.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because now you see it's like everything is connected because the maker movement, I believe in it because I believe it can prepare us for the future.
Yeah.
And that's why
it's so importantly starting with the youngsters, right?
Yeah. And because if you want to design the future, actually start with the youngest, right?
Yeah.
Because in the future, they're going to be responsible for the world we're going
to
be in. Because
education needs to evolve, right? My son can't have the same education as me because I was writing in sand with sticks.
Yeah.
Needs to evolve.
totally. And it was super inspiring because people over there, they were talking about the gaming and education. And actually, it was really cool because they even invited the kids at the conference.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like a huge discussion panel about the gaming and education. And then it was like a part of for a question. And one really small boy raised a hand and he was like, hey, I know what you are talking. I really love gaming. So how I should talk with my mom to force him to show her that actually it is good for my education?
That's a damn good question.
It is, right? So... So, yeah, it was really inspiring and I met a lot of people and I was in the same hotel she was a doctor from Queensland University and she was like, she'd been doing a huge international project for online education system in Australia.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the destination are so far in Australia, so they really into online learning and it was really inspiring.
So Joanna going to the event and Joanna after the event, what changed?
What I have to offer is actually, because I always was looking at myself like from, you know, I'm a Polish girl whose accent is like from Russia and, you know, the Poland, where is Poland, right? No one knows.
Yeah.
So, but I realized that what I have to offer is actually, it's globally approved. It was like a quality stamp. Boom.
Because sometimes we need that, right? Like
yeah.
After all the, like you have bumps in the road and you're starting this new thing.
It's like a stamp, right?
Yeah.
And it's like your destiny is slapping you on your back and saying, keep going, keep doing it. And because you are here for a reason, right? Like everything what happened before brought me here, right? If I didn't if Deloitte didn't fire me, I wouldn't start working with the kids, right?
Yeah.
So you see, this is the process. This is the process. Even from a failure, you can bring something.
Yeah.
It was a moment when I jumped to the plane, I was like, okay, I have to come back with an idea what actually I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
And after India, I went to the... I was in Australia, in Western Australia, and I was at the Rottnest Island. Maybe you heard about it. At Rottnest Island is the only one island in the world where are quokka are living. Quokka, they look like rats. It's like a mix of rats and the kangaroo. But they are like the most relaxed and chilled animals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you Google quokka, you see they are smiling.
Yeah.
And you know why? Because they never experienced in their life like a predator or anything that
so they just chill.
Just chilled. And then that was a moment that I realized that how actually like the whole environment has a few influence on you. And that was the moment that I realized that whenever I have to provide, design, do something, it has to work like in the whole environment that it was a stamp for me that if you look at things from the wider perspective, you have to look at them like it's a whole ecosystem. And that was the part in Australia. That was a part of, you know, of our value in radicals, right?
Yeah.
That we do not provide only like one part ripped from the context, but we provide like a whole ecosystem in which this one actually part of the product can, you know, evolve and mature.
That's so really interesting, because I mean, I have to say to you, when you started talking about the rat, kangaroo, what's his name? Quokka.
Yeah.
I was really going like, Jana, how are you going to bring this back into the story of radicals, right? And you just nailed it. And I want to repeat it because I think it's super interesting. It's like a key insight, right? Is that the environment also shapes you, right? And in that animal space, because they weren't under threat and they kind of live in this environment, they act a certain way, and you have the ability to affect that environment.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And then after Australia,
yeah.
I spent a New Year Eve in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
And in Hong Kong, you can see, actually, Hong Kong influence you can see in our branding, because I use like...
I do. I mean, that was a question. Like, for, I mean, I'll put some of the stuff in the show notes, but there's a different Asian dissuasion.
Yeah, you know, now you know where it's from.
Okay.
It's from Hong Kong. But what I love about the Hong Kong, that it is a mix of the past and the future.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you want to somehow speculate how future of cities might look like, go to Hong Kong, because this is the best example. It's the island is so small, but they are living a lot of people, so they have to go up.
They have to go up and
look how the architecture looks over there, how actually they deal with the problems, the issue of the pollution, with everything. Mm-hmm. They are like, you know, 100 years before us. So that's why I think...
It's had this influence on you too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, and it sounds like this. I mean, I didn't realize. I know India, but I didn't realize this whole journey.
It was a journey, and when
had
I
had this influence on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Really hard.
And this is now where radicals kind of. So I mean, there's two things, right? There's the creation of radicals, and then there is also your, because I kind of your undertone is like, get to hustle, like really. And when we spoke recently, you said to me like, man, I've kind of amped up the way I worked. I really put the time in.
Mm-hmm.
And is that true? Like, did you put in more hours now? Like,
oh my God. I, you know, maybe it's not a problem, but what I'm doing right now, this is my passion. It's actually, this is the way how I express myself. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I have to get my stuff done, but I feel so comfortable.
Yeah.
It's what I'm doing right now. I feel so happy when I'm doing it. And I feel so fearful. And I'm working really hard. But you know how is it? At the beginning, at the end, you have to work really hard. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, it's like I like invest all my money into it. I was broke at one time.
Yeah.
And my parents, they helped me a lot. But they were at some point, they were pissed because, you know, I'm not that young anymore. So to like, take money happening? From my parents, right? And they're trying to push me, like, go to work, do something with yourself. Yeah. We are worried about you.
Yeah.
Because I know they wanted to support me, but they don't understand actually what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So they don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So, but the money, they are important, right? We have to eat. We have to pay rent. So, at some point, you have to like decide if you want to pay for a face cream or you have to pay like for another month of your server of your website, right? So the choices you have to make, there are a lot of them. But I am devoted into what I'm doing. Yeah. And I really believe in that. And I know this is something that was meant to me to do. So no, I'm just doing it.
I'm just doing it. I can see you doing it, right? And I love the whole idea of like choosing between face cream and a server. You've told me the story of your evolution, designer, creator, blah, blah, blah. But now you're a business owner. Do you feel like a business owner? Do you think it's a whole new skill that you're also learning?
Yeah. It's really hard to, it's like, you know, the spreadsheet is nothing new for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to pay taxes. I mean, I still don't know the difference about the brutto and netto. So I hate invoices. I hate like numbers. Mm. I'm really bad at it, but I have really good people who support me. So it's really hard.
I think that's something that we sometimes underestimate, right? Mm. Is the fact that that also comes into play, and you need to be as passionate about that than as you are with creating your work. You have to understand that it's not only just about being able to focus on the work.
No.
You need to run a business, right?
You need to run a business. You have to at some point you have to delegate. So you have to hire, not fire. Mm. Not yet.
So you have not. You have to
hire people that you can delegate, because you cannot do everything, right?
Yeah.
You have to delegate. And recently I've been talking with a guy. He's a creative, right? And we're going to cooperate. And I feel like I lost something, because he will be responsible for a creative stuff and like that, and all design that I already done on my own. And I was like, I was really sad, because I feel like I gave a part of me to him. And it's, but I realized that I can't do everything. If I want to run a business, I have to focus on the business. Yeah. I have to like give those people like environment and everything that they can develop.
Can you just, there's a lot of things that I wanted to talk about that happened with Radicals, because you're really living up to that title, right? Can you give me a few examples of the stuff that you guys have done?
Actually, like the most, the project that we are most like not a famous, well known of, is those are the events, this design in the future, because I realized that I'm talking about something really new that people they are not aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I have to educate them and then show them that I have right tools that I can provide you. You can pay me for that, and I can lead you to the future that I'm talking to you. And
highlight one of them. Give us an example of one of these events.
Each of them is about a different topic. For example, first of that was designing the future sex toys industry.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to tell you about the whole process, because the process is actually reflect how we think and how from our perspective future should be designed. First of all, we made like a historical research. I go really deep into the data, doing the desk research, and look actually how the sex toys were invented.
Yeah.
And I noticed that actually the first vibrator, it came up from Cleopatra, and she closed in the pipe like bees, and they were like just like shaking, and that was the first invention of a vibrator.
Okay.
I'm really excited about the Cleopatra. She was like, she was inventor.
Yeah, she was the original badass.
Yeah. And then you realize like the turning point of the sex toys industry was during the first industrial revolution, because the everything changed, the way we work changed, and there was something which was called hysteria. It's the same in English.
Yeah.
It's a hysteria, because it's hysteria, especially in the womb, if we are talking about the woman, because you know the we start work pretty fast, and there was like the pressure was also really high.
Stress.
It was really connected with the stress, right? Yeah. Because you know, think about our lives before industrial revolution.
Yeah,
we
were sitting in the shade. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of stress and hysteria. And then the like doctors realized that they have to like massage girls to like, you know, relax them and give them the orgasm, right?
Yeah.
But they are doing that like with the hand. But the problem, the issue was so huge. So they had to somehow invent something that they could help them to do the massage for a woman.
They have to industrialize it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the moment when the idea of vibrator came up. And at the beginning, it wasn't, because I made the research also how it was communicated, because I was really interested. And it was like not, you know, the sex toy or something, but the massager dedicated for women.
Yeah.
And for a really long time, it was communicated like that. And if you like doing a proper research, you could notice that the time, you know, the second industrial revolution came with the electricity. So the vibrator, you could plug it in,
in the socket in the wall.
Yeah, and in the wall. So after that, it was, you know, the wire was cut and you could like charge it with the batteries.
Yeah.
And nowadays you can charge it, you know, with your USB, right?
Wireless.
And so you could see how actually the invention evolved during the time with all the technology development. Wow. And also you could see how actually the trends, if I'm talking about the trends are for me the kind of expectation the human had.
Yeah.
Expectation and changes in the behaviors, right? In their behavior. So you could see how it evolved. And if you have like this bigger, wider view. I present what kind of technology we have right now, what kind of trends are right now. For example, we are getting back to the handcraft. So figures were prototyping like the future vibrator from made from the stone.
Yeah.
Because you can, you know, made it from with your hands. And there was like a stop before because it was the whole event was separated in like in the lecture with the research, with a like a review of the technology and the trends. And then we have also, I invite a sexologist and we have like really amazing conversation with her because we were talking about our needs, what's about our sexuality, right? Because no one is talking that much about it. And if we were aware about like a whole context, what kind of technology we can use, what kind of technology we want to invite into our lives, then we prototype the future solution we would like to use. And some of the ideas were really crazy. Like, for example, one girl, she invented like a vibrator which is like shaking in the way they are at their favorite playlist on the Spotify, something like that. So it's like, you know, with the music from Spotify, but
still, I mean, I can see, the thing is we're having a bit of a laugh as well because I'm smiling as you're talking, right? But the thing is, what I do appreciate what you just told me is that, I mean, of course, when you look at the photos, you go like, these are a bunch of ladies having crazy fun and technology going all over the place. But what I do get from you, right, is that there is like, through the research, you can see the arc because now you can kind of see what's happening. Because even in the sex industry, you look at how things evolve. Mm-hmm. There's industrial revolution. Of course, it has an effect on these implements. And then as you go forward, you can really start to think about like, where is that arc going to go? You can predict, but you have to make it intersect because I think that is the key, is to see when you had the sexologist come in. And when people start sharing about what their expectations are. So when the two, and I'm talking that intersection will happen in the future. If you can predict that, you can kind of figure out where it's going to go.
Exactly. And that's I just told you what is the process of designing the future.
Wow, there's method to your madness.
Yeah.
Great.
It is. It's always is. Because, you know, people tell me that I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy. There's always like a method. There's like everything is well thought and there's something behind it. If I'm doing something, it is a part of a bigger plan. It's a part like of a whole ecosystem. And trust me, it might look crazy. It might look pointless, but it has a bigger plan. It's a part of bigger picture.
And the thing is, what you said to me in a past conversation that I think is also important for people to know, and I think it came up even during this conversation, something that happened to you in the past, is that you feel sometimes that you're a little bit ahead of the curve, right? And that might be, it's a good thing. It might be sometimes a bit disheartening because sometimes people just don't get what you're about. And that's okay. I mean, that's okay. We all have our opinions. Like, how do you deal with it? Like, how do you, like, do you feel that way? Firstly, maybe I'll ask, like, do you feel that sometimes you're ahead of the curve?
I feel all the time.
But how do you keep going?
I mean, first of all, I have to tell that I feel lonely in that because I really don't usually meet people that I can discuss with about.
Yeah.
And especially in Poland, but I'm going to Barcelona in March, so I hope to meet.
You might find a few friends then.
Hopefully. And It's hard because I was at the conference once and I told the people, it was a UX conference at Google Campus, full of like developers and designers. Mm-hmm. And I told them about the future, about the process, and they were a lot of a question from them because they trying to compare that, what I was just said, with something that they already know.
Yeah.
But there is nothing right now that they can compare what I'm saying to. So they don't understand it. And this is a learning for me that I have to share the ideas in a way they can understand it. Got my point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So they ask me a lot of questions. How do you scale? How do you do like this? And what's your a lot of question about the details.
Yeah.
Because they trying to have, you know how the human brain works. It's like, if you cannot imagine something, you have to like compare it with something.
Yeah.
So that's why. And I feel so, I was really pissed after this conference because I didn't have an answer for those questions. But it was a fail, but I get learning from that.
Yeah.
That I have to like present the ideas in a different way that they could understand it. We are, for example, and I really invite you to doing and follow us on Instagram because daily we are producing like daily news, mm-hmm. with the trends, with the technology, with the sustainable developments, projects. And because I realize that I have to give the people knowledge, give the people something which actually they can understand,
yeah.
and just to show them the right direction into the future.
Yeah, you need to create your future, yeah. like you said, right?
You don't need to, you have to, and yeah. you can do it if you have right tools and right knowledge.
Gather around, kids, it's story time.
Tell a story about something exciting you have experienced, and it doesn't have to be related to design or anything.
Mm-hmm. India. I was in the zoo and I noticed there was like a group of kids and they were singing. So I just like quiet, just want to like
sneak closer
and want to like see what actually they're singing about. And they, of course, they noticed me and then they like chased me to go and sing for them. And then I was like, oh my gosh, because I cannot sing, what am I going to sing to them? And they just like, you know, they grabbed my hand and forced me to go there.
Yeah.
And I started singing like a song of a Polish star from 80s, Zdzisława Sośnicka.
Okay.
And they were clapping, singing, and some point they were like, the girls, they joining me and they were like, you know, dancing in the Indian way. And it was really amazing.
Well done for bringing Polish culture.
Yeah, exactly. And they were so excited about it. And it's turned out that I can sing.
Okay, so now I'm going to put you even in the worst spot.
No, give it to me.
Sing the song.
Oh my God, seriously?
Jestem tylko wspomnieniem.
Because it's a song about saying goodbye to the fairy tale.
Zabawmy szli słów, dziwnych radości i ciepłych słów. Dzisiaj, gdy przymniesz do mnie radosnym pamięci tchem, oprócz wyglapłych nocy zobaczysz właśnie mnie. Jestem twoją bajką.
Three more questions. Mentors. Do you have them? Do you believe in them? Can you mention one or two?
I don't. I just, like I told you, I believe in ideas, but I have one book that actually really changed me, and it's Viktor Papanek. He is a guy who talking a lot about responsible design, but that anything that we design, anything that we produce has to somehow it need to have a function. We cannot produce something which is like do not answer the function.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was really.
Can you say the title again?
Designing for a Real World.
And his
Viktor
name?
Papanek.
Great. And then Radical Studio. You guys are super active. If I want to know more about you, want to find you, want to follow you personally, give us some links. Some
Radical is dot studio, and just you can find us on Instagram, Gipfy, and I want to mention that because it's really amazing, because we launched like our own GIF collection, and
it's on fire.
It's on fire. We have millions of views, and I realized that this medium could be also used in a different way. It could be, we actually started using it as a portal where you can look for trends, because GIFs, they are actually like the first thing and first medium that you comment your reality right now.
It's like a little popular culture inside there, because the other thing we haven't discussed, but we'll leave that for another conversation. I think for the listeners listening to this, go watch how Radicals is doing their social media, because I think you guys are really doing a good job and getting the word out there, and it's working for you.
Yeah, because it's a lot of energy, of course, we have to put in that, but I see that it's already paying back.
Yeah, content's king, right?
Yeah.
Then, I really had fun. I mean, it was a crazy show with ups and downs. Yes. But what's next for you? What's happening after this?
After this, I have a call today with a guy from, from Fruiter Robotics, and they invented like a robot that you can. That is actually they use artificial intelligence, so they have you have like a face expression and everything. And we're gonna talk about the collaboration, how we can actually promote their product here in Poland. Furhat Robotics, Google it. They launched the robot at Web Summit this year, and it was super crazy. Because they actually present their robot on a stage, and they had like a conversation with that and that's my plan.
So I mean, I just want to say thank you, because when you said to me the future is happening, I didn't realize the future is already happening this afternoon, and you have to go.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending time here, and all the best for the future.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mariner.
Thanks for listening to Block Thinking. You can find more information and the show notes for this episode at www.blockthinking.com. That is blockthinking without the K. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast platforms. We thrive on critique, so feel free to leave comments on iTunes or get hold of us directly. Thanks for listening.
Now you know my story. Now I have to kill you.